Now entering Nerdist.com. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. Jackie Cation, Laurie Kilmartin. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show. It's the Jackie and Laurie Show. The Jackie and Laurie Show.
Hey. Welcome to the Jackie and Laurie Show.
Are you Laurie Kilmartin?
Yeah.
I'm Jackie Cation. What a coincidence. And there's Kyle sitting over there.
Yeah.
Tapping, tapping.
And hello. Again, there's a joyful audience underneath us.
Right, Paul F. Tompkins is downstairs.
Oh, really?
A delight.
He's a delight.
There's nothing wrong.
But I don't want to hear other people's joy while we're doing a podcast.
We're bitching
you're killing
about
down there.
Comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please.
Can I get a work in? No, then I guess. I don't want to hear it. We both did a show at the Improv tonight.
Yeah, we were at the lab, the lovely lab.
Yeah, the improv lab. It was fun and it was supposed to be edgy. It was called The Awful Truth. Bronson Jones show. And it was really fun. And the audience was very nice. And I just wanted to try my new weird Awful Truth jokes. Because you can.
Yeah.
And I wasn't pleased how it went. There's nothing to be done. You know the only thing that could fix a bad set?
What?
A good set.
You had a fine set. You were working on a long story up front, and you stayed with it.
I stayed with it, even though there were not enough punchlines. I was like, oh, I will continue to talk about this.
You're brave. You're an explorer. You're Vasco da Gama. You're sailing around the world. You don't know if you're going to land any place.
Nope.
I respect you.
Exactly. I am Magellan looking for the straits. I'm like, where is there a punchline here? No? Okay. Keep hugging the coastline, Kate. Hug the coastline.
That was cool. It was I had a short joke to try, and then I had some stuff that's new-ish.
Right. You killed, actually. You had a really good one, and then
thank you.
But there was a little bit of staring, so you closed on a great older joke. I closed on an older joke too, so it went fine.
Yeah. Well, so right now I'm working a certain chunk of material, you know, trying to shape it, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess it's maybe 10 or 12 minutes worth of stuff that I'm still massaging and still interested in seeing if there's anything else in there. And then I had done all that and I hadn't got the light yet. So I was like, all right, well,
I should do something.
And strong. I don't want to.
Right. Well, you don't want to throw away 3 minutes.
No. And
you're not going to leave. I never get off early.
Plus, a guy booked me on a show. Like, I don't want to sit there and just, I want to do well for him. You know what I mean?
He's trying to build something.
It's show business.
Yes, it is. Right. It's the business
it's
of show.
Entertainment.
Sure, you're trying
And I did get to work on the thing. I'm only just like, oh, I wish I had, two more minutes worth of stuff I wanted to work on.
Yeah.
Instead of, practicing telling this old saw one more fucking time.
Well, I did that thing on the road where I booked the flights too early. So I went to Seattle. I did Kirkland.
Yeah.
And I left too early. Why would I? Why?
Right.
We're in the same time zone. There's no reason for me to go. Why do I have to be? I'm not going to be able to check in till 3 anyway.
Oh,
why am
no.
I getting there at 10 a.m.?
Oh, my God. And, that's horrible. Was it that much cheaper?
I don't think it. Maybe it was. Maybe it was cheaper.
Okay.
It must
have been,
right?
Give yourself the benefit of the doubt.
I'm going to give myself. I saved hundreds of dollars, you guys. and then on the way back, I did the same damn thing where I'm like, oh, I didn't. And because there were two shows last night, I didn't get back to the hotel till 1.
Yeah.
And then I had to get up at 5. And I had to wind down.
Always leave late the next day.
Just leave late.
Because you're not going to go home and have quality time with your people.
No,
you're going to be shitty
down.
And feel awful.
I had a bath and a 4-hour nap.
Yeah.
That's what I had. And then I came and I did a set and I'm doing this. So there was no reason for it. And, I forgot my notebook. So when I went to the show tonight, I forgot my notebook, and I was like, "What? I wanted to work on this other new thing, and I couldn't remember anything."
Fuck.
So I was just beating my. But last night I had two amazing sets at Kirkland. I was very pleased.
Cool.
Very pleased. It's in this weird strip mall.
Yeah.
Have you noticed the strip mall comedy clubs? There's the comedy club.
They're fighters, those guys.
Right. And the only other industry that has ever lasted as long as any comedy club in a strip mall is the hand job place. And it's there's the one in Austin, Texas that I didn't even know was
at Cap City?
How crazy is it in Austin, Texas that the Guatemalan grocery store didn't last? But in that strip mall. But what Rich Miller told me was a hand job place. And it's not even a massage place. It just is all blacked out windows and it says open. So I was like,
you're really stereotyping that store. It sounds like a grocery store to me.
It could be anything. It could be anything. It's true. So I don't know, but I'm home for 2 weeks. I'm pretty psyched.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm just doing sets around town. I'm pretty
that's
happy
awesome.
About that.
I feel like everyone around town has had it with me. You know what? I have, like, all of a sudden I got this burst of new energy about the topic of wanting my mother to die.
Oh my God, that new stuff was great.
Yes, it's working.
It's working.
And
it's so
short,
great.
And I'm like, I gotta make this tight and get it on TV before she actually dies.
Right, because otherwise everyone's sad. Everyone's super sad.
Know.
You can't do it.
I know. I've talked about them after they die. I did that with my dad. I want to get my mom before she dies.
Exactly.
I don't think I realized how much of a toll preparing for her to move and trying to sell her house.
Yeah.
Everything involved in that has just been on my mind for
months.
Over a year.
Yeah.
Over a year. Longer. Because I was trying to get her out, you know?
Right, right.
And trying to get rid of their stuff and stuff. And now that it's done, I feel 100 pounds lighter. I have room to think again. There's
cool.
only so much pressure your brain can take before you just shut down creatively and you're just, you know, on life
you're just
support.
Treading water and you're just, it's fine. And you're like, I know that there's material here, but the pressure is too great. Because the thing is you knew that the premise was there. And you're like, I'm trying to make this premise work. But tonight was the first time I saw all of those jokes sort of gel and really click.
Thank you.
So that was really cool.
It also, I felt like before, you know, all this, it was almost like rocks rolling downhill, you know, but before that, I was just trying too hard to make some stuff work.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. And
there was too much pressure from all sides.
Yes.
It's not loose enough to find the joke.
You forget that it's going to affect your comedy. You're just like, you compartmentalize and you're like, oh, that's that. And then
that's my life.
It presses down on every part of your brain.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Totally.
So I feel excited in a way. I feel light. And I have in a way I haven't in a couple of years because of all the stuff that's happened.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. The grief takes a while to process.
Yes.
And then, you know, you can move on. And it's great. Speaking of parents, I guess my father's birthday was a week and a half ago something. Yeah, I forgot to call. And my brother called me and he was like, was Dad's birthday? Did we miss it? And I said, oh my God, we did. It was in March. And he goes, was he 80? And I said, no, no, he was 79. And my brother goes, oh, then it's fine. It's not a big one. And so I talked to my dad and I was like, hey, so it wasn't 80. We'll get you next year. And he goes, yes, if I make it through August. Because my dad always thinks he's going to die in August.
What?
He always thinks, I don't understand. My father isn't a numerologist.
That makes for a chilling summer every
year.
Like, you can't really enjoy it and let go.
Tick-tock. And he lives in Wisconsin.
But plenty of July vacations.
He's just
a lifetime of July vacations.
I was just like, Dad, you are contrary. You're going to die in April. Don't worry about it.
It's an A month. He's half right.
He's half right. I don't understand. He's like, everybody dies in August. And I'm like, everybody else died in August and July. I don't understand why.
I don't know where he gets his stats, but I get the feeling that's
my grandmother
true of a lot of things he
my
says.
My dad, my grandfather, and my grandmother both died at the end of summer. Yeah, his immediate family.
Right.
My stepmother died in July. My mother died in August. He's just like, we all die. That's when we die. And I was like, I don't know that anyone else is looking at the calendar like that, Dan. And you might want to move the...
Does he sound elderly yet?
Does he do what?
Sound elderly.
He did right out of surgery. Like last year, he was sounding kind of old. And then my brother got all mad at him and threw his walker away and said that he had to get it together.
That is some scared straight rehab for a 79-year-old.
Very, very scared straight. That's Ruskation for you. He's like, why don't you walk it off? And he's like, that's why I need the walker. And he's like, well, get a cane like a man. I think I told you the story before.
Wow.
And he actually said that to him. And quite honestly, it worked. Because my dad was milking the cane, the walker.
Yeah. My mom is a woman and she uses a walker. So I might, I have to say maybe your brother Russ had a point on that one.
Right. Because what happened, then my brother Phil got him like a fancy cane, like a cane with like a griffin on it or something. Yeah. Or a silver. He's Armenian.
Yeah.
That chandelier joke, chandelier, by the way, is amazing. That chandelier joke is amazing.
Again, it's. It's like it only works in parts of Southern California because you have to know,
you gotta know Armenians
in Glendale.
Right.
And why do I waste my time on that joke? I was like, you know what?
It works.
And I'm here. I'm trying to get laughs. But I want a version of that that would work anywhere. But it's
just pick a different immigrant group.
I don't want to pick another one that's been everyone else has been picked over.
Oh, right.
Right. You Armenians, you're fresh victims.
We are fresh meat. Fresh meat. Go Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
What the heck? And so I just go, hey, what do you think? And so that's hilarious.
Well, yeah. So I tonight was fun. And yeah. I feel a little more, my brain feels a little more warmed up because we did a set.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
And then I felt guilty that we didn't stick around. I want to see Quincy Jones.
I haven't seen Quincy. I haven't seen Tom Rhodes in
a long time. Yeah.
Yep. So,
and Quincy's taping his special tomorrow, I think.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat.
Quincy has terminal cancer.
Yeah.
And he was on Ellen, and he was talking about it. And Ellen called HBO, and HBO is going to air his special that he had already,
kickstarted to make,
yeah.
Right? That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Yeah.
It's.
I actually don't know it.
I know him just a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, the pressure to comedically address that topic, your own mortality, and you have like 6 months to do it's, you know, it sometimes it takes years to get a joke right, and the pressure to do that
to
is
get an
astonishing.
Hour together. Yeah,
because I'm sure he has an hour. He's been doing comedy a long time.
Yeah,
but you know what I mean.
But he has to address the topic.
Yeah,
I think he is. Maybe you could just bookend it. Maybe
when?
You can open and close with the cancer stuff and then just do the stuff that he's been because you know how like someone's been doing stand-up for 30 years, they deserve to some extent, if anybody deserves anything,
right,
people deserve an hour special, right?
Sure.
And we live in a golden age of stand-up comedy where you can make your own albums in a heartbeat.
It's golden to be able to spend your own money on that really is the golden age. Really?
Sure. You and I have both done it. Did you do it because you had been told that people were looking for content? I was told people were looking for content.
No.
Oh.
Well, for my special, no. I just wanted to. Because it was a targeted topic of my dad,
I just
really wanted to get out. But no. No, but you
no,
did.
I was told.
You fell for that one.
I fell for that. That's I was told that it was.
But you should put out a CD. I mean, yeah, you should have a record of what you've done.
I was going to do a
on
CD.
The internet before you die.
Right. Well, and right. And
which
and
is what Quincy is doing.
Yes.
You know,
and he's got the time.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is because it's so he's dying, he has to address it,
yeah.
And he can't just do his act, which is, of course, I think a crime against society. Because a crime against stand-up comedy that he can't just do his hour.
Maybe he will.
Maybe
you know,
he does.
It's his choice, really.
Yeah, hopefully.
He doesn't have to address it
if
he doesn't want to. But I worked with them at Jones Coffee. Rachel Mack has this really great gig
at
a coffee house, coffee house in Pasadena, but it's packed and it's a great crowd.
Sure.
And I came into the second half of a set and he just finished doing that chunk that he's working on, so I missed it. So I was bummed. But you know, he could do whatever he wanted to. But I think if he has the stuff he...
I think there's pressure for him to...
Yeah, I guess so.
There's pressure. And I just wish he didn't have that pressure. I wish he could just do the hour that he, to some extent, I think,
that you
deserves.
Want, yeah, because...
He gets to do because he's been doing stand-up for 25 years.
Because 25 years from now, you and I might be gone too.
Right.
But various HBO specials will be popping up. And you know, people go, oh, that guy was great.
Yeah,
you know?
And exactly.
Whatever he wants to
and
talk
it's,
about.
It's timeless. It's like mm-hmm. the old albums of whoever, like Bob Newhart's album from the 60s or whatever. And did you ever listen to, have we had this conversation about listening to comedy when you were a kid?
I didn't listen to comedy when I was a kid.
Me neither.
It was all guys.
Why?
I listened to Steve Martin because he was on the Carol Burnett show.
Okay.
My gateway drug was Carol Burnett.
Interesting.
It wasn't any albums. I only listened to comedy albums after I was shamed into them by guy comics going, you don't know who does that. I'm like, all right. fucking get his comedy
album.
I totally got shamed.
Yes.
And they're all like scholars. These fucking potheads and cokeheads. All of a sudden they're comedy scholars with their fucking albums. Okay, I'm sorry. I was busy going to college for a year, but still, I went.
Right, right. I was taking a political history class. Do you know the difference between Suharto and Sukarno? You don't. So why don't you blow me?
I don't either, honestly.
Suharto and Sukarno.
Is that Indonesian stuff?
Yeah, they were two Indonesian leaders, and I used to know the difference between them. And I took, Southeast Asian political science was my
While others were listening to Bob Newhart albums.
Right.
We were taking
and in 84, I had to, somebody was like, because I didn't know who Lenny Bruce was. I genuinely did not know who Lenny Bruce was. And I got shamed.
I don't shame you on that.
Well, I got shamed to the point where I bought three different albums, and one of them was funny, and the other two were just him reading his transcripts and whining.
Right.
And being all sad sack. And
now I get that more than ever. Man.
Now we're living it, you guys.
That's what this podcast is. Our transcripts of our fucking bitter lives. That's the Lenny Bruce I identify with,
right.
Finally.
Finally.
Like, I finally get Sam Kennison, and I finally get Lenny Bruce now.
Well, and yeah, and I...
But why would, you know, for me, a white girl in Walnut Creek, you, a white girl in Wisconsin, why are we going to know who Lenny Bruce is?
Right.
Raised by our parents.
Exactly.
You know, our Catholic parents.
Right.
We're not going to know.
My dad had a bunch of, I wish I could, he can't even remember the names of the albums, because he had some comedy albums from the 60s.
Really? Wow.
Of like obscure Jewish storytelling comedians.
Oh.
And he stole all of their material and used it for sales. And when I came home from doing stand-up, I listened to one of them, and the stories were familiar because he would told them at the dinner table. And I was like, Dad, that's
actually... Is he telling like Red Fox stories or something?
And they were more obscure than that. It was almost like he was looking for, you know, like when people steal material. It was almost like he was looking for, I'm not going to steal, you know, the famous bits of, you know. And I called him on it, and he was like, I don't have to not steal bits. I'm a salesman.
Damn.
And I was like, you, I guess, are correct.
If your dad was on Instagram, he would have lost his deal with Comedy Central.
So much
like
cred. And so, right, he was in no longer. Comedy Central has a bunch of new hours coming out and a bunch of new shows coming out. And then they renewed Nikki.
Yeah, they renewed Nikki.
They renewed Nikki Glaser.
I think.
It's a great show.
Yes. And that was the only female I saw in that. And that particular release. I think there's been more, because I read that Jessica Williams, who was
they're
on
in
the Daily Show. Yeah.
They weren't picked up yet, but they ordered them to be looked into.
Who?
A bunch of women. There was, like, the first, the list of things that are booked were
all
men. All
dudes.
And
they're all funny guys, so I don't want to be like, ugh, but it's like, you have Nikki Glaser, you have Amy Schumer, you have Broad City. Like, clearly there's a market for funny women. Why can't I finish
the
sentence?
Why can't you finish the sentence?
I'm so outraged. I mean, I know why.
Because it's exhausting.
Whatever.
Oh, I got I must have said something to somebody. Somebody got mad at me on Twitter. I got four.
Wait, on Twitter? Wait a minute. Hold everything.
Nobody ever gets mad at me. Like, because of the Dork Forest, I have the most supportive podcast fans. But I guess I must have said something either on this podcast or just in life on some other. Like, so I was on somebody's podcast and I must have made some crack about some dude. Mm-hmm. And then somebody retweeted it. And because four different comics or four different dudes were said weird, mean things at me about women not being funny. And you know, when you on Twitter, you follow them back to their feed.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, their entire feed was like, I don't understand why there's any women on this Ari Shaffir storytelling thing. Bitches, man. They just never shut up. And you're like, oh, I see. And so I didn't engage with anyone on Twitter because I don't think I'm ever going to change their minds.
So much energy directed at people that have no meaning in your life.
Well, yeah, they don't. I mean, I was like, do you book something? I guess you don't.
If you book, I will engage.
You can't. I will try to change your mind if you book. Do you book a weekend?
Yeah.
If you book a
one-nighter even. If I could drive to it, I will work to change your mind.
A drivable one-nighter? Yes. If you book a drivable one-nighter and you hate women comics, I will somehow work to change your mind. If you do not, I can't. I don't have that energy. It doesn't affect me.
Let me. Is there anyone who books a one-nighter who doesn't hate female comics? That's another question to answer another time.
Tribble says he's always regretted not booking me.
I love David Tribble.
Right. Well,
totally
and
not sexist at all.
He's a good egg.
Yeah, he's a good egg.
Yeah.
He will do his low-paying shitty gig.
Exactly.
But I loved them. I cut my teeth on those. They were the best.
This is what I will say to young comics. If you want to work the road and you have a working car,
yeah,
Dave Tribble will book you. If you're willing to pick up the headliner and drive 1,400 miles.
True.
Yeah, he's totally. And you know, that's how you can learn how to do 30.
Yes.
Yeah,
someone was saying, how do you get paid in comedy? I'm like, I don't know anymore. Like, I barely get paid in comedy anymore, you know? But like, if you have 15 minutes, you'll have to do a half hour. You'll fucking figure it out.
You will figure it out.
If you have 35 minutes and you're supposed to do an hour on a Tribble run, you'll figure it out.
You will figure it out.
And it'll be a couple rocky shows. And then.
But by the end of that run?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a, you know, if it's a 6-week run on the road or a 4-week run, you'll have done what? I don't know. At least 20 shows.
Yeah.
And you'll drive and you'll eat a lot of Jimmy John's.
One will have been canceled.
One will have been canceled.
When you're halfway to the state.
You'll be sleeping under a blanket that has cigarette holes in it. But whatever. It'll happen.
But you probably already do. You're a comic.
Exactly. And so I did Kirkland, and then the MC in the feature, I was like, hey, do you guys want to, you know, because I want to do something during the day. So we all went out to breakfast, and the Travis Nelson. Yeah. And he was like, oh, because he works the road. And the MC, brand new. This was her first weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Her name's Kelly. Kelly, I think it's at Kelly Han, H-A-N. On
so
Twitter.
Ad is her first name? That's a...
Ad is her first name, and she's amazing. Anyway, but this was her first... She's only been doing stand-up for a year.
Yeah.
So she emceed. And then the feature guy has been doing it like 6 years. And so we go out, and he's like, I'm wondering if I can pick your brain. And I was like, I never know what that...
Rhea Butcher just tweeted something about how she can't stand that phrase. She tweeted it in joke form, by the way. It's not a direct quote. But I fucking hate it, too. It seems like people are told that's how you ask somebody for advice, to tell them you want to pick their brain. And you don't have to say it that way.
You don't have to say it that way. You can just say,
I just want some advice.
Can I just ask you a couple of questions?
Yeah.
Which is a better way to put it. It's true. But they're super nice young comics. And so we went out to breakfast and they were both interested in the mysterious world of comedy festivals. They were like, should we do comedy festivals? And I was like, if you have the money to do comedy festivals because they don't pay, and you want to, and you can't get stage time, if my thing with comedy festivals is I want there to be someone you need to visit in Atlanta. Right? I mean, because you're going to have to fly there and put yourself up, and then you're going to do sets for free, and someone's making money.
There's so many festivals now, too.
And
when
so
we started, there were just a couple, and they were just the big ones.
They were the big ones, and they were industry heavy. They were just pile of haircut heavy. And if you can go to one where haircuts will watch you, and you are brought on the backs of elephants, that's fine. But if you're just doing it because it's comedy camp, then that's different, you know. Then that's so my advice was, if you have someone to stay with or visit, if you have, I was like, I think it's a better idea just to save up your money and go to New York for a week or go to LA for a week if you want to have people see you.
Yeah.
And then don't be sad that nobody knows that you're a big deal in Toledo.
Yeah.
Because if you're a big deal in Toledo, nobody knows that. But if you're a big deal in Toledo, you're probably funny. So if you can get up, like if you give yourself 6 weeks, like I'm going to go to New York, I'm going to go to the comicscomic.com or comedybureauhere.com and look
up. Slava, I think, in New York.
Is that what that is?
Batslava, I think, yeah.
Okay. But I mean, there's a way. It?
Yeah.
How do you spell Batslava?
S-L-A-V-A.
Yeah.
S-L-A-V-A. So you can look up. There's people. Beautiful people who are compiling lists.
Oh my God,
cool
heroes! Jake Kroger at the Comedy Bureau.
Is
like
a
when
damn
I was
hero,
workshopping all my
treasure.
Dead dad jokes.
Yep.
I went to open mics, you know, and I just was like, "What's the Comedy Bureau say I should do?"
Yep.
And I went out and did them. I mean, it
every
was
day has a list of shows that you can go see and try to get on eventually.
It's completely
and a list
updated.
Of open mics,
yeah,
and it's completely
it's,
updated.
It's not out of date. I'm not. Is it?
It's pretty out of date.
Do they have one in New York?
They have them for just about every city.
Just about every city is doing it now, and those people
are national
treasures.
They really are.
And so, but what I would say is say you're coming to town, And just and find those cool kid shows. Find those shows that you want to either and just go, hey, I'm from Seattle or I'm from wherever. I'm coming to town for a week. Give them a month. Give them 6 weeks and just ping them online. I mean, it's ping probably not something Rhea Butcher wants to hear. So
we're doing the show exclusively
hey,
for
guys,
Rhea
she
right
should
now.
Totally, she should
and
be
is
a
it
comic
Rhea
of the
or
week.
Rhea?
Okay.
Okay.
She was on the Dork Forest talking about the Back to the Future movies. She's
oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah,
yeah,
she's really
she is awesome.
And she's a great comic. Do you want to do comic of the week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Caitlin Gill.
Yes.
Caitlin Gill.
We talked about her last week, I think, because of she does
of
a show with Bobcat. Yeah,
yeah,
she's really funny.
But she's really funny.
C-A-I-T-L-I-N? Or, mm-hmm. And then Gill as
G-I-L-L.
In G-I-L-L.
Yeah. Yeah. So
check her out. I mentioned this earlier before you and I started, but what you're saying with the first year and the 6 year comics is there's like a certain time in comedy where you're just starting and you're just like fucking everything's a premise and your whole life,
yeah.
You know, you can't stop
you can't
the
not
jokes.
Writing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just pouring out of you.
Yeah.
And then at some point, and it, I guess it's different for everybody, you're like, okay, I covered everything. Now what, you know?
Right.
And it's,
right.
It's
and you got to find a place to mine. You got to find a new vein.
I know. And I feel like there's, you know, one technique which I've seen since I started is people, you know, getting really drunk just to have a story to talk about,
yeah.
You know, and it always feels like cheating. You know, it's like
it's contrived.
The little tiny details of your life, if you can figure out a way to focus on them, are going to be funny. If you look there, you know,
right.
Like you don't have to create this crazy life that you then talk about. Which I sometimes feel like the crazy comics are. It's all
right.
It's not people that are normally crazy and just figuring out on stage. They're sort of making themselves that way.
Patience is the hardest thing when it comes to creativity because mm-hmm. everybody plateaus. You know,
yeah.
I mean, there's spikes and there's plateaus and there's valleys, and there's no way to force it. Except, I mean, you could sit there with a blank page and just write. And like Maria asked me one time, she was like, I need a writing assignment. And you remember in The Artist's Way?
Yeah.
One of the weeks, I do this as a writing. I said, here's a good writing assignment. Break your life up into 5-year increments and try to write a joke about something that happened between you were born and 5, between when you were 6 and 10, when you were 11 and 15. And then just sort of examine your life on at 4-year, 5-year increments.
Wow.
And see if there's anything there. And I don't know that she got any material out of it, but it was a writing
she
task.
She hung up on you.
She hung up on me.
I'm never going to Jackie
for And I'm never talking to her. I've had enough of her and her kind. And there's the guys who get drunk or get high, or women, I mean, or get laid.
You're gender
just
neutral
for the,
guys. Yeah.
Yeah, just everybody to get material. And then there's people who purposefully shock jacket, you know, who are just trying to, like, I saw a guy at a show a couple of weeks ago and the premise was great, but he was working around this premise. And so 3 different times he said the words, I love O.J. Simpson because he made it okay for people to kill white women again. And that made me laugh the first time. And then he said it 2 more times. But the real premise of the joke.
Maybe he didn't understand the nature of a callback. If you don't repeat exactly word for
right.
word the joke.
And not 47 seconds later. Not every 40 seconds. But the premise of the bit really was, as he talked around it, and I wish I could remember his name, and I'm so sorry, man. He isn't. But the real premise of the bit was he's sick of hanging out with white people. That was the real bit. The real bit was awesome.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it's exhausting hanging out with white people and I can't face it anymore. And I laughed and laughed because there was no punchline.
Yeah.
But that's the premise.
Yeah. That's what my favorite thing is to like figure out the emotion you have and then write jokes off of that. So like, the jokes aren't always true. I mean, you know, stuff with I said about my mom tonight.
Yeah.
Some of it's true and or some of it starts true and then it gets crazy and some of it isn't true at all.
But you're building off of you're building off of a real emotion.
Which is exhaustion
and frustration.
This woman is still
yes.
there, still herself. But it's weird. Like last summer, I was going to Ireland, right, to deposit my dad's ashes, various places, right. So on the way, I stopped in New York for a couple days, and I was doing shows.
Can I just say that what? I picture you like in Shawshank Redemption, where you're just like moving your pant leg out and just dropping ashes as you walk around the yard.
I did not see Shawshank, and I never will. So, step off.
All right. It's one of the most perfect movies in the world. Nobody wants to hear that because now you don't need to see it.
I've heard that so many times. I reject it.
Now
it can't be.
You
can swing it on me one night at a party or something. But
I've tried to make Andy Ashcraft watch Midnight Run 6 times.
Ah, it's a great movie.
It's the greatest movie. It's the greatest buddy movie.
It's
I think
Shawshank, of course.
Do you know the current version of by the way that buddy movie
what?
Of Midnight Run is The Heat? Did you see Melissa McCarthy and Sandra Bullock in The Heat?
No.
It's one of the greatest buddy movies I've ever seen as
oh,
well.
Oh, cool. If you, I will check it out. I like
it's, both there's
of them.
Talk about some cussing. Talk about some no Miranda rights.
Yeah.
There's good times. Good times cool. in The Heat. Good times in Midnight Run.
Yeah.
Anyway, but
no,
I've interrupted. You're in New York.
I should have given them my money. Okay. Yeah. I'm anticipating this trip to Ireland, right?
Yeah.
So I had this thought. Like, first of all, I'm like, all right, I'm going to Ireland. I'm putting ashes places. Is it legal to do that? Can you just show up and
that's
throw
what I
ashes
don't think
someplace?
It is. I don't.
So then I was like, well, what if somebody objects to me doing that?
Human remains.
Right. And then I started writing a story based on me doing that and someone saying, you know, stop it. This is a farm. And me saying, well, you're going to have a crop of gray potatoes and then running. But that didn't happen at all.
No.
And I was telling even, like, before I had ever gone to Ireland, I was saying I just went to Ireland just because I wanted new shit to work on.
Yeah.
And then someone comes up to me and they go, oh, my God, that story is so funny. I can't believe that. And I was like, it's
you
not
shouldn't.
True.
You shouldn't believe it because it's actually fiction.
And then I stopped telling it. But there's a joke there that
there's
I
totally
could shift
there.
Around. But I felt so guilty, especially because I do most of the stuff is based in truth that I talk about. You know, I mean, if I didn't have a kid, that would be like a major lie. If my dad was still alive, that would be a terrible lie. You know, so it's all true. And so this was something I have that same problem. A writing thing. This is a writing thing. I'm a writer. And what if this? All you do is two what ifs, and you have a story that you want to tell,
there
but it's not true. So I should just rework that into a different kind of joke, which it's totally
there's
doable.
Totally and there's totally something there because that's hilarious.
I wish someone had done that.
I know.
If one person had even batted an eyelash, then I could tell that story with a straight face.
Right.
I have too much
integrity.
Guilt.
Too much integrity. That's the way
guilt.
It goes. It's
Because I have something to say. Are you looking at lists of things?
I'm looking at a list. I was just going to say that the one thing I did not do over this weekend that I want to do when I'm on the road, but I never do,
right,
is the secret 1 a.m. show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you go to the town and they're like, hey, there's a midnight to 2 a.m. show. There's one in Minneapolis. There's one in Atlanta. There's one in Seattle.
Yeah, I did one in Atlanta.
And guess what? I'm tired. I totally wish I could do it, but I
you know what? My shows aren't secret anymore.
And they're always across town. Like it's never 10 minutes.
And they never
it's
put always, you right up. You're always last.
Minutes. You're the secret.
You're the big headliner.
You're the big secret headliner. And
it's 3
a.m. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And I want to do another set.
Yeah.
How much do I want to do another set? So bad. But I couldn't. And plus I should have because I didn't end up sleeping last night anyway. Right?
Because oh,
my
that's
flight
right.
was
that
early stupid flight. I could have gone and then gotten back to the hotel at 3.
You ruined your trip by
I
making that early
it.
Flight.
I could have worked on my new perimenopause joke. Who doesn't want to hear that fucking joke?
I want to
no
hear
one.
It.
Everyone's. I'd worked on it a little bit this weekend.
Yeah.
And
so what's a main? What's a audience full of? You know, regular people. No, what? How are they? When you say perimenopause, do you feel like guys are pulling back and women are like, no?
Oh, you know what? I don't say perimenopause because there's no hard K. No,
perimenopause. Why isn't it called that?
I don't know why. It's essentially. I've tried it now twice.
Yeah.
I tried it once with Mario's audience.
Yeah.
So they were completely on board and super sweet.
And that's not helpful, by the way.
Nope. That's not necessarily
that's not the
barometer. It's really hard to use that as a yardstick.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I did it in a strip mall in Kirkland, Washington.
That sadly is the real world.
That's the real world. And parts of it worked.
Okay.
I think the thing, my opinion of jokes that are hard for people to hear.
Yeah.
Screw you.
Right.
I got to work on this joke. I'm going to do my weird sexual assault joke. I'm going to do my weird middle-aged lady time joke. If I can find the right punchlines. If I cannot find the right punchlines, you are correct. They are not meant to be. We are not meant to be. And you were talking about getting the jokes out about your mom. Mm-hmm. I want to get these jokes out about middle-aged lady time before it shuts down. But there's part of me like, please shut down. Please, body, call it a day. Because could you imagine if I got pregnant at 50? No, I don't.
Very rare.
It's super
very unhealthy.
And the jokes, of course, are is that that would not be that's that baby that's a canticle for Leibowitz. That is not anything anyone wants to raise. Anyway, too much info.
I don't know what canticle for Leibowitz means.
Oh, okay. HTML code. Somebody said that they love that I have all these weird dorky references, but then you throw like a Dreamweaver line.
Those are separate things, though. Like
they're very different dorkdoms.
Yeah,
it's very true.
Yours is fantasy, and mine. Is reality. That's right. Reality geek is like it's not programming, it's scripting, but yeah, you're in fantasy geek land. It's a totally different kind of nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very true.
That was a nerd reference?
Yeah, that was a Canticle for Leibowitz it's a great book. It's about how history is cyclical.
Oh, really?
Anyway, it's everybody get out there, knock yourself out. It's after the bomb goes off, society kills all the intellectuals.
Yeah.
And the intellectuals go underground, and then there's sort of remember the monks who did the illuminated manuscripts? But the illuminated manuscripts from the end of the 21st century are things like grocery lists and 50 Shades of Grey or what. I mean, it's literally.
I don't know what the illuminated manuscripts are.
Oh, illuminated manuscripts are what the monks did.
The Irish monks?
All of them. They were all monks.
What's illuminated?
Illuminated. Colored.
Oh, okay.
Those pretty manuscripts.
Yes.
With the
I didn't know they were officially called the illuminated manuscripts.
And know that because I went to the Getty and they called they were showing a bunch of them and they're called illuminated manuscripts.
You're just shaming me left and right.
I'm full of shame. Suharto no, and Sukarno, please.
Oh, my God.
Let's get back to that guy. How about this? How about speaking of shaming people into watching things?
Yeah.
There seems to be a new way, a new thing going on in the last couple of years where if you destroy a heckler and then you put it on your YouTube page, you can get a lot of you can get some money from YouTube.
You pointed out Sean O'Connor tweeted about that.
Yeah, he tweeted, and I don't know which comic it was. I have my suspicions.
We all have our suspicions. Right, we know who it was.
It was it was one of two people.
There's
as
one.
Far as
there's
I can
one
tell.
Guy that I've heard stages these things. So
he stages them.
Yeah.
So it's like
a scripted
plants.
Thing. Yeah. It's a you're seeing a scene. Oh, not somebody actually
crying out
destroying
loud,
destroying a heckler,
right? And how destroyed? You know, I was talking to Augie Smith about it, and he was because Augie, no one has better road stories than Augie Smith, where someone has lost their minds, and has you remember that old video of the guitar comic,
who
beats the guy in the audience with his guitar,
yeah,
and that was from the 80s, and But Augie knows all of those stories.
Yeah.
And I guess I've heard that too, is that one of those guys sets up. It's a plant. And it makes me mad because audiences will sometimes come up to me after or come up to comics and say, oh, was that planned? Was that the way that went? And you're like, no, things were planned. I had jokes planned is what I had. And then a banana head who had 3,000 beers had to open up his pie hole and I had to shut him down and be super mean. And I didn't want to be.
I don't like destroying. It's not my nature. I have a new thing lately that I did once that I taped and put online where I talk somebody into leaving the show because if they don't think I'm funny,
right?
This is going to be a terrible night for you.
Right.
And you deserve better. And
take
I sort
it on
of
the
go
arches.
That way. And I've had a couple people, I've been able to talk them into leaving.
Nice. That's
where
perfect.
They thought they were going to get me. And,
right.
And instead of me getting, you know, fucking destroying them, I'm like, no, I totally agree. I don't.
The first,
get, you know, you should go.
Vanda Michaels, who is Vanda Michalowski, right? Who gave me, was the first woman comic I ever saw.
Yeah.
She gave me the advice that I have on my website, how to be a Zen comic.
Yeah.
And she was the first person I ever saw deal with a heckler that it felt, for want of a better word, it felt more feminine. It didn't feel like you were destroying somebody. She genuinely, this is 1985, 86, and she looked at this guy and she just went, she put her finger up to her lips and went, shh. And she kept doing it until the guy shushed. It was awesome. It was the greatest.
Well, the other thing, like, you know, when someone's destroying, those are all fuck. It's like memorizing roast jokes and then just coming out and saying various ways that this man's mother had sex with everyone in town.
Right.
Like,
right. That's all it is.
It's not that clever. And if you can memorize five of those jokes and tell them in a row,
I don't come jump on the bed when you're working.
Yeah. But the audience doesn't respect any sort of originality. They like it fast.
Yes.
And so that's all you have to do really to destroy a heckler is that. And
it's just go to the vault.
Where's the art in that?
Yeah,
you know?
I did.
Not that you should have to have art. You know, they should fucking be removed.
Right. I haven't had to deal with a heckler in so long, and I would like to knock on every wooden surface in the world.
This is laminate.
And, okay, I'm going to knock on my head.
Okay.
And the stock lines, I remember the first stock line I had, when you hear a new stock line.
Yeah.
Like J. Wendell Walker. You remember that guy from Seattle? He was probably 80, still doing the road. And drives in his town car.
Part of me is like, that's my dream, man. If I could still be driving to gigs when I'm 80.
Yeah,
he's fucking awesome.
He was on, crying out loud. I'm spacing. It was in the 50s. It was Elvis made a big splash.
Ed Sullivan?
Ed Sullivan.
Whoa.
He was on the Ed Sullivan show when he was 18. J. Wendell Walker. Yeah. Yeah. And he's still doing stand up.
Wow.
Yeah. So how crazy is that?
And that's cool.
In 1994. Three, I think. I saw him at the Comedy Gallery in St. Paul, Minnesota, and some people were talking in the
Tom
audience.
Tom Hansen gig, right?
Scott Hansen. Yeah. And I heard him, he said something that I had never heard, which was, where did you learn to whisper under a helicopter?
Oh, my God.
Remember that one?
One of the classics.
A classic, right? And so I said...
In a helicopter. Where'd you learn to whisper? In a helicopter.
In a helicopter. Yeah. Or under... He said under a helicopter.
Oh,
and I said to Tom Hansen...
He put his own twist in it.
Right. And I said to Tom Hansen, that is the funniest... line ever. And it's funny that she'd mentioned Tom. And Tom said, you know, he might have written that because he was alive when helicopters were invented.
He was too old to go to Vietnam.
Right.
Oh,
right.
My God.
Yeah. And he's such a sweetheart of a guy, too. Like,
wow, that's cool.
And it's so great to watch him do one-nighters and do weekend work. And you're like, yeah, I wouldn't mind being 80 and doing weekend work.
Totally.
That's fine.
Look, here's the thing. Like, if your comic, you write, so if you have an agent, they're always going to try to push you to get a different thing, right? Like, and if late night writers, all of our agents are like, you got anything scripted? You know, and I, for a long time, was, you know, writing stuff every once in a while, but I my heart wasn't in it, you know? And I just realized, like, I fucking love working on late night. I love writing jokes. I love seeing him go up that night.
I like
starting over the next day fresh.
Oh, wow.
I'm into that sort of rhythm. And I don't...
If you guys don't know, she writes for Conan.
Yeah.
Lori
so Martin. I don't... I'm not hot to leave that and work on something where it takes 8 months for the thing you wrote to be produced, if it gets produced.
And,
you know,
it's a learning curve, too, to write that a different kind of script.
Yeah, and you don't, like, it's always, oh, you got to move up. Like, sometimes you can just stay where you are and be happy and then do other shit that works up. Like, my stand-up, personally, I'm trying to move up creatively.
Yep.
There's no place up for me to go besides just to try to do more spots and, you know, do another TV set and whatever. But write new stuff. Like, it's more just dig deeper and get to be the best comic I can be. Like, I feel like I get that opportunity because... I'm happy in one place. I'm not like trying to get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not broken, it turns out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think there's always pressure to, you know,
right.
more. And you don't know, like, When I first got a writing job, I didn't know. I thought, okay, that's the next thing you're supposed to do. Like, I didn't even ask myself, do I like this? It didn't occur to me to ask myself that.
Right.
I'm just like, oh, this is what I have to do now.
This is what I'm supposed to do.
I have this agent from CAA, and I have to do this, or he'll drop me. And all of a sudden, I had these goals that weren't interesting to me, you know?
And they're not your goals. It's
right.
Somebody... And, you know, remember the Mitch Hedberg joke about, and I'm going to mess it up, it's about how you work really hard to be a stand-up comic, and then they're like, you should be an actor.
Yeah. And, right, yeah.
And that's the – and I can't remember how it goes. But it's really
– yeah,
it resonates because it's so true. Last year, someone was like, you have to write this. This is a great idea for a sitcom. You should write a sitcom. And there were people actually interested in a sitcom with me in it. And I'm like – that'd be great. Can someone else write this? I mean, I have...
Why do I have to learn a three-act structure all
exactly.
of a sudden?
Exactly. I have to... I don't even own final draft.
Yes!
I don't even own a final draft.
Exactly.
And I was like, how about if I just in Word write out some... And you know how to crank this stuff out, right?
Yeah, you got an expert. Is there anyone in L.A. that can write sitcoms?
I think there are. I think there's gotta be. I was talking to my friend Miley Flanagan, and I'm like, you know someone who writes... Because everyone I know who writes sitcoms is writing for a sitcom and doesn't have time. And she's like, I do have a friend who's in between.
Yeah.
And she wrote on The 70s Show. And I was like,
great.
Well, that's a great.
That's perfect.
That's a person who's funny. I like The 70s Show.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So something might happen to it that I don't know. Are they giving sitcoms to 50-year-old white women? Is that what 2016 is going to be? Okay, fair enough.
You know, and, who knows what they're going to do?
Well, and
I don't know.
And it would be fun to have a sitcom and then a table read. That would be fun.
Oh, my God, that would be great.
Why wouldn't it be? Who wants to see a sitcom with Jackie Cation where The Big Bang Theory meets Roseanne? Or whatever. Somebody else came up with the two mashup things.
Yeah.
So and I was like, okay, those are mashup things.
Yeah.
You know, because you can't write a sitcom
Their log line was The Big Bang Theory meets Roseanne.
Yeah.
That's great.
Or Mike and Molly or some other where somebody's not thin.
How can we explain Jackie? Oh my God.
That isn't exactly how can we explain the well-kept showbiz secret that is Jackie Cation.
Oh man.
So true. So freaking sadly. Okay, so I heard... So somebody said that we might have already discussed this, but I only remember discussing the voice burn thing last time. Imposter syndrome. You were talking to me about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And then I had to look it up.
That link to...
Hillary Clinton.
Someone wrote an article on Slate about how they think one reason Hillary Clinton is despised by some people is she doesn't have that apologetic sort of imposter syndrome. She carries herself like, mystery person just opened
Hello,
the door.
Hello, mystery man. He's a good
So she doesn't carry herself like someone who doesn't think she should be there. She clearly thinks she should be president.
Right, because she's clearly overqualified and she'll be fine.
She goes to fundraisers and she asks people for huge amounts of money. That's problematic to some people. But she's whatever it is. I do agree that with that sort of thing where she might be the first person who isn't – you know, stumbling adorably into authority, you know, where she's like,
yeah,
I have this experience. She spent a lifetime lining up her experience and her donors. Yes.
Right.
You know, but
turns out it's not a hobby.
Yeah.
And not pretending that it's accidental.
Like,
right.
Oh, me, president? Okay, thanks, guys. You know, like she aggressively has been courting it since she was first lady.
That article said CEOs and women who are in other powerful positions have this, either they have the actual thing where they think that they are imposters.
Tina Fey's joked about it on 30 Rock.
I've seen most of 30 Rock. I don't remember that episode, but Eric, another comic, a guy told me that men have the same thing and where they don't think that they're qualified, but they just show up and fake it till they make it.
Right.
I was actually raised to be an imposter. So I was raised to believe that I could do anything without any skill or I was like, well, because my father would genuinely say things like, well, that idiot can do it. And you're not that bright, but you're smarter than that guy. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm going to do that.
That's kind of an ingenious line I might steal and use with my son.
Oh, please do. Please do. It's feel free. That Elliot Cation, you should always take 85% of what Elliot Cation has said to you. And then the last, like, I've tried this bit 1,000 times. I can't make it work. But he genuinely, when we were kids, would say, you can do whatever you want in life, which is beautiful. And then he would say, as long as they don't catch you.
Oh, my God. That's
that is actually not the rule, Dad. The rule that is that last 15% is batshit. Anyway, but yeah, so imposter syndrome cracks me up because there are any number of women who have the education and the work skills and to be that insecure and make a gajillion dollars a year or have that much power, that sounds like self-sabotage.
Totally. I mean,
that sounds ridiculous. Of course it is.
I didn't think I was funny till like recently, like about 5 years ago. I was like, well, I get laughs, but I don't, I'd be like, well, yeah, but I use that trick to get a laugh. Like I would break down everything and then sort of dismantle it and make it, seem like it wasn't that much of an accomplishment.
I never had that problem. I was like, oh no, I am excellent at this. Which is obnoxious, right? I mean, I never said it out loud because no one wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
And I at least had that kind of, but I was like, no, I'm pretty good at this. In my head, it was always, well, it isn't a hobby. So if you're doing it and you're getting paid for it, well, then you're clearly okay at it. And I don't, women comics don't move up as fast sometimes as guy comics. Mm-hmm. I had that problem, but I never had the problem that I was like, I don't think I could headline. I never had that problem. I always thought, no, I could, if that guy can close, I can close. It's not going to be the end of the.
I'm going to say, but if you have to have an example of somebody saying, is somebody not good closing, if that's the thing that gives you your confidence, then that is a little problematic.
But the thing is they were excellent comics.
Right.
It was never like, I never know if I should say the names because I love this guy and he's great. But I emailed the Improv probably 5 years ago.
Right.
Aaron. And I said, and I was looking because the Improv on the road never books me. And I said, hey, I was looking at your lineup and I have the same credits as Ian Begg and he's hilarious. But I can do if Ian Begg could do it.
Yeah.
I can do it. And he's hilarious. And she was like, you're right. And then she booked me, and then has never booked me since. But
you told me that last week.
Oh, did I tell you that?
Yeah, it was Cincinnati, right?
Yeah, it was Cincinnati.
What you said just reminded me something totally off topic. In that bit you're doing where you say errands.
Oh, errands, yeah.
I've seen you do it twice, and I think you say Aaron for a second, and I'm wondering if you picked another word, or if you said groceries, or if you – do you want to say one word?
I do want to say
errands, so
right.
You could say shopping.
Right, a better word.
Just
that's
for a second,
idea.
Twice it's been a hiccup of Aaron.
It's a mushy word.
Yes, it is a mushy word. So.
Got it. No, thank you. Yes. No, totally. Okay. I will change from errands.
Yeah.
Because I was doing errands, but who cares?
Yeah.
Maybe I was going to, I was probably going to the grocery
shopping.
Store.
Shopping. Yeah. Just something. Yeah. Because the joke
shopping.
Isn't necessarily, the
pick
joke
up
is
some
that
milk.
You look like you haven't brushed your hair.
and I'm carrying
a
bow and arrow.
That's right. You're
and I have my bow on.
Yeah.
So nobody wants my quiver, which, by the way, Andy gave me that quiver. It's from Xena the Warrior Princess, the TV show. Okay. He got it as a...
How much time have we done? Are we at an hour yet?
I think that's a three-pointer. Lori, come on. Well played. Whatever.
No more baseball references, please.
No more baseball references. All right.
I'm such a hack. I hack because you know what? I was on an email thread at Conan with the other writers, and I did a reference that accidentally was a three-pointer, and so then I think I made that exact joke on the email chain, like no more, whatever. So I just hacked myself. So I just wanted to.
Did you reference your own material on another?
The laugh that I just got is undeserved.
You don't deserve that.
Right.
Here's what I would say. What? Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do.
It turns out you're a writer. You get to reuse things from the Twitter. You get to reuse things. I use everybody's stuff. It's I use all the places that I've
written. An expose on Jackie next
week. No, not
week.
Everybody. So that did come out wrong.
Yeah, it came out really badly.
It's when I remember that joke in The Simpsons where it was the Maggie shooting series.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Whatever. But at one point, Marge says, "Well, when I married your father," she says to Lisa, I took his name and I also got his DNA." And Lisa just looks at her and goes, "What?" And so I always say that I get. Andy Ashcraft's, I get all of his jokes that he makes.
Yeah.
And I also got his DNA.
Oh, yes, yes,
it's
yes.
A great
okay.
story. Can we tell that one again? Please, for the love of Christ.
Let's go back to the lab right now.
Oh, my God. What else? What
okay.
else you want to?
Did I tell you that? Okay, so I went to see a friend of mine. I can't say his name.
Okay.
A comedian. Did America's Got Talent. So I
right.
went to a taping of America's Got Talent.
Right.
I learned everything.
Oh, did you?
About life.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay, so we're it's my friend, and he may or may not make the show.
Right.
He they will decide later if they decide to use
him. Oh, did he do the like the short
the early tryouts.
The 3-minute
yeah, yeah.
thing? Okay.
So, so it's in Pasadena, and again, this is nothing against your people, but I'm going to say there's a lot of dumb fucking Armenians in that.
Nothing against black people, but did you know that they're short? Oh my God.
I like how you went with the stereotype that doesn't exist, but
well,
I
that's
no.
what well you got to do okay. it get, the Belgians
but,
it's a Dana Gould
listen,
joke
it's,
anyway
oh it's I don't know Dana that Dana Gould joke but I wish I did but mm. he, but okay so
day.
So like the okay so the there's a, an act to come out that
okay.
comes out before my friend
I'm gonna like
call
a paid
my
audience,
friend
right?
What?
So it's just a paid audience.
No. They just oh. wander and they get free tickets.
Oh, fair enough. They're free
okay,
ticket
so
audience.
Okay, so it's my friend. Oh, I'll say his name is Dave. It's not Dave.
Okay.
But I just need to say a name. So it's before Dave goes up, there's a transgender or transvestite Spice Girls
singer
group.
Okay.
Girl group, right? And so this greatly annoyed a pack of 17-year-olds that were like just mumbling and going, boys to men and cracking themselves up. Just that kind of shit.
Just exhausting.
And by the time Dave got up, it was like 11 or 11:30 on
at night?
A Tuesday.
Oof.
Yes. And they'd already been there. For hours, like 4 o'clock. People might have come in later
right.
and people have left, but it's the worst comedy situation. They haven't seen a comedian yet that day. He's the first comedian they've seen. And here's what they do. The acts just walk out. Like, there's no, and please welcome. There's no setting the table. There's no anyone telling the audience what's happening. So my friend Dave walks out and, you know, mumble,
every
mumble.
Act walks out cold?
Yeah.
No introduction.
No introduction. And so he's an older guy. He's
yeah.
been doing comedy like over 30 years. Like
77 30, years.
Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly. So, you know, it's not like he walks out and everyone's like, oh, a comedian. It could be like, is that a sound guy? is that man lost? Like, there's no, right?
It could be anything.
You're right. So he's up there and he starts, you know, they do this little interview ahead of time, the four judges, which are Simon Cowell, Mel B, Heidi Klum, and Howie Mandel.
Okay.
And he made this choice, which I know he regretted later, to answer the questions with jokes.
Ah.
And the audience got angry. Like,
oh, geez.
The audience is like, duh. It sounded uncomfortable.
Yeah.
He sounded nervous.
Ah, and poor
he was.
Bastard.
And I'm dying in my seat. I'm
yeah.
dying because I know how much this means. You know,
right. He was giving it.
And I know how great of a comic he is. And I'm like, oh, what do you do? Don't, you know, we've yep. all done that thing where you're like, oh, this will get him. And then it doesn't. And
does
you're like,
not.
Fuck. Okay. So I'm like in my seat. I'm dying. And so that goes okay. Kind of weird, but he hasn't got the audience on his side. You know,
okay.
I think on that thing,
so he kind of saves it a little bit, but he doesn't
barely,
have
he
them.
Gets technical laughs. Okay. So this
right.
is just on the interview part. Right. And I think that part is very important where you want the audience to get to know you
yeah.
and you don't want to try necessarily be funny. You want them to have empathy for you immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's like, all right, I'm going to tell jokes. You know, it's such an awkward start to comedy.
Wait, they do the interview first?
Yeah, they do that. Where are you from? How old are you? Blah, blah, blah. And what are you going to do for us? I'm going to do some stand-up
comedy. Last Comic Standing did the other way.
Yeah.
You did their set, and then they did the interview.
Yeah. So okay, so he starts his set and the first joke he tells is one that should be told as soon as he gets on stage because it's about his appearance.
Yep.
And because it's now the fifth joke,
it's too much.
It's too it doesn't
too
work
late.
As much. And he gets jarred and then he I could tell he forgot a line. It's like everything that your worst fucking nightmare is happening.
And then his pants dropped and he was like, this is my ass. I'm so sorry.
So then he kind of clicks in again and he remembers a chunk and it's a good, it's a really funny chunk and he does it and it gets a really good laugh.
Good.
So the audience is sort of turning. The audience are animals that need to be it's almost like you have to look at them. You're playing to this audience that is being encouraged to almost be Apollo-like, with loud, with their, you know, boo, yay, boo, yay.
Oh, right, right.
And then you have the judges that you have to also manipulate. So you have all these things. It's the opposite of stand-up comedy. It's really
it
not stand-up at all.
Really
it's really all this other shit. And so he gets out okay. It's a tailspin and he recovers and he's back up in the air. So it ends and then Howie says, you know, it's really late. I can tell you're a really good comedian and he just pointed out everything horrific about the situation he was in. And so he goes, I want to see you again.
Okay.
And then
that's great.
Heidi Klum.
Oops.
The German Germans known for their, you know, sense of humor.
Right.
Eckhart Tolle.
Super sensitive.
Yeah. So she says, I didn't get it and it wasn't funny.
Okay.
And so when she says that, the audience, there's audience right behind the judge, and they stand up and start doing thumbs down.
Okay.
Which I think they've been trained to do, because if they didn't want them to do it, they would make sure that they don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, so they want all this reaction to these performers. And then Mel B's like, you know, I liked you. I want to see you. She's also kind of like this sympathetic. I could tell. I know you're really good. I want to see you again.
Right.
And so it comes down to Simon. And Simon, you know, slags him. I didn't get it. And I won't give away the joke, but Simon criticizes my friend Dave. The thing he criticizes about him is something that you could say to Simon word for word.
Oh, really?
So my friend says it. And the audience goes, yeah, like he
zings him back.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
And all of a sudden there's momentum. There's forward momentum again.
Yeah.
And so my friend goes, look, just let me tell one more joke.
Yeah.
You know, and now I see him. He's like relaxed. He's himself. And he says, you know, it wasn't this that I wanted to have. I was really nervous. And he was very, very quick, immediate assessment of what he had done.
Yep.
As any professional
and
would.
And regrouped.
And regrouped immediately. And now he's comfortable on stage.
Yeah. Because.
Yeah. So then he tells this joke that's like really corny.
Yeah.
And the audience again, some people loved it. Some people are angry. I mean, you wouldn't believe all the shit that's going on. And Simon didn't like the joke, but he liked how hard that it was told, that he's like, all right.
That's awesome.
So I don't know if he'll get on.
Right.
But, you know, it was amazing,
fascinating interview.
It was everything that could go wrong. And then the 30 years of being a comic kick in and then you save it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking amazing. And
that
I hope they air it as it went, because it's like a master class in how to recover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, really amazing.
When I did last comic, God knows if I've told this story, who knows anyway, but it was terrifying.
Yeah.
It was just too much. And Bill Dwyer was on right before me and he comes off stage and he grabs my shoulders and he goes, it's just stand-up comedy. In the end, it's just stand-up comedy. He goes, it's terrifying back here, and the cameras are too close to your face. But when you get out in front of the audience, you're just going to tell jokes. It's just stand-up. And he kept saying that. And I was like, that is the best advice I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean.
But
and the fact that Dave rose to the occasion, that guy, Dave.
Yes.
Is awesome.
It was
so
really
perfect.
Awesome. And here's the thing, though. When you're doing a TV show, it's not stand-up comedy. It's TV.
It is.
And there's 10 other things they give a shit about and before they care about your set, especially on a competition show, you know?
Right, but it was, I think it was 600 people at the Wiltern.
For
Last Comic.
Yeah.
And so once I started telling the jokes, it didn't matter. The die was cast,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Because once I open my mouth and I tell the first joke, I'm like, well, it's either going to go or not go. Tell yeah. the jokes, get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what he meant. And that's what I internalized.
Yes, yes. And, no, you're right. Yeah. That's all you can control is what you tell, yep. your jokes that you tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
It was perfect.
It was
the perfect thing for Bill Dwyer to say. Yeah, that's cool. Thank you, Bill Dwyer. And he's not listening either. So it's fine. I think we're at an hour.
Are we?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks for listening to the Jackie and Laurie Show, you guys.
Thanks,
my name's Jackie Cation.
I'm Laurie Kilmartin.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.